You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good afternoon. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom this afternoon, I am Carl Frisch, syndicated columnist and Democratic strategist at Bullfight Strategies here in our nation's capital. You can find out more about me at carlfrisch.com and connect with me on Twitter and Facebook at Carl Frisch. That's K-A-R-L-F-R-I-S-C-H. What a weekend we had, am I right? Mitt Romney announced Paul Ryan as his vice presidential running mate in Norfolk, Virginia on Saturday, not far from the studio here in Washington, D.C. Let's give it a listen.
Join me in welcoming the next president of the United States, Paul Ryan. Every now and then, I'm known to make a mistake. I did not make a mistake with this guy.
Oh,
but I can tell you this, he's going to be the next vice president of the United States.
There you have it. I guess the Olympic gaff train is still on the tracks for Romney. Anyway, we've got a great show for you today. Joining us in this hour to talk about Romney's selection of Ryan, we've got Ben LaBolt, National Press Secretary for President Obama's campaign in Chicago, Mike Tate, the Democratic Party chairman from Paul Ryan's home state of Wisconsin, who will be joining us from Madison, and John Nichols from The Nation, who knows quite a bit about Wisconsin politics. But let's get on with the show. Joining us now is Ben LaBolt. Ben, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Carl.
Absolutely. So, big day this weekend. Paul Ryan selected as Mitt Romney's running mate. And the Obama campaign has been quick to point out some significant things that people have to consider, namely what you need to know about Paul Ryan, five core facts. And I wanted to get your take on them as we kick off today's show after the weekend announcement of Paul Ryan. So we've got Paul Ryan's top-down budget plan is a sham. How is it a sham, Ben?
Well, I think the selection of Paul Ryan certainly made the Tea Party happy, but it really further crystallized the choice that was out there. If you didn't think that Mitt Romney's top priority was extending and expanding tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires at the expense of the middle class and seniors, look no further than his selection of Paul Ryan, somebody who's been out there trying to brand himself as a deficit hawk. But if you looked at the New York Times today, when push came to shove and he had the opportunity to negotiate with the president over that $4 trillion deficit reduction package, he said that the House Republicans shouldn't negotiate because any success on that front in reducing the deficit could help the president's reelection prospects. So, you know, ultimately that was that was very political.
I wasn't surprised he chose Paul Ryan. I mean, have you seen the tax plans that Paul Ryan has proposed? I mean, Mitt Romney would make out like a bandit under Paul Ryan's plans.
Well, he'd pay less than 1%. I mean, the tax cuts are actually larger than those in Romney's plan. But Romney's budget has largely been a carbon copy of Ryan's budget.
He's going to sign it on day one, he said.
Right. He called it marvelous. He's got those tax cuts for the wealthiest. He'd repeal the Affordable Care Act and let insurance companies go back to discriminating against you if you have a pre-existing condition. He'd repeal Wall Street reform. And so ultimately, these were really a carbon copy, though I did find it entertaining over the weekend that the Romney campaign, and only the Romney campaign would say this, said we're nominating Paul Ryan to the ticket because of his ideas. He's got a budget plan that we like, but we're not supporting the budget plan.
Well, it's quite unusual for a vice presidential candidate to have more on paper when it comes to public policy than the actual presidential candidate, isn't it?
Well, and that's the fact of the matter is that Romney, over the course of the past year, thought that tearing down the president was a sufficient way to get elected, that he wouldn't fill in the details. He proposed these $5 trillion tax cuts for the wealthiest, but he wasn't going to say how he was going to pay for
right.
them. And with that Tax Policy Center report out a couple of weeks ago, I think we know why, because there were two ways to do it, either explode the deficit by $5 trillion or raise taxes on the middle class, average middle class family with kids by $2,000. But now he has filled in the details, and they'd be devastating for the middle class and seniors. Seniors paying $6,000 more out of pocket for their health care. Taxes going down on the wealthiest Americans, paid for by the middle class. Severe cuts
Sad.
To programs like education and research and development that are really going to fuel growth and job creation.
Well, Well, they keep calling themselves the comeback team, and I'm like, you know what? They are the comeback team. They're going to come back for our Social Security. They're going to come back for our Medicare benefits. They're going to come back for our student loans. They're going to come back for our jobs. And they're not going to leave anything on the table for working families.
Well, that's right. We shouldn't forget, you know, folks know the details of Ryan's Medicare privatization proposal. But they should also know that this was the architect of Social Security privatization. We know how that went across the country as President Bush and Congressman Ryan promoted that initiative. So I think this has clarified the choice. It's crystallized the choice. And it's what the president said the choice would be all along. We've got a choice of building the economy from the middle class out or trying to build it from the top down. And the problem with that is we've passed these tax cuts for the wealthiest before. We did it in 01
that
and
turned
03.
Out.
You know, it led to the slowest pace of job creation we've seen since World War II.
And the president's been digging us out of that hole his entire first term. So Mitt Romney called himself a severely conservative candidate when he was running for president. We now have a report out late this weekend showing that Paul Ryan is the most extreme vice presidential running mate in a century, more conservative than any Republican nominee for vice president in 100 years, and further from the middle than any Democratic vice presidential nominee. What do you make of that?
I saw that report. I didn't see exactly how they calculated it. But here's, I think, the essential question facing the American people when they go to the polls in November is, how are we going to restore economic security for the middle class? And I think there's no doubt that the Romney-Ryan plan would erode that security instead of put us back on track to restoring economic security for the middle class. Independent economists have said that their budget plan, because of these severe cuts to things that can fuel growth, would actually slow economic growth down and could cost us a million jobs. And the question is why you would support that type of budget when we are still digging out of the consequences of the economic crisis.
Well, I mean, to hear the Romney people, it's because Paul Ryan's got youthful vigor. And it occurs to me the only thing youthful about Paul Ryan is his age. I mean, the policies that he's pursuing are not something that's fresh or unique or something that you would expect from somebody who's 42 years old. They're a throwback to what the Republican Party has done over the last, you know, 20 years.
That's right. I think the president referred to them as the same old trickle-down fairy dust that we've tried before. We were promised that it was going to unleash growth and job creation, and it never has. Look, countries around the world are racing to invest in things like education and research and development and manufacturing, and we have an opportunity here to make sure that we win a race to the top, not compete in a global race to the bottom. And the Romney-Ryan budget could really hamper American competitiveness.
Well, and at a time when the economic recovery is so fragile because Republicans, you know, have failed to step to the table to work with the president to make things move quicker, the last thing we need to do is throw a wrench in things and make them go backwards from where we've already come.
That's right. I mean, these are the same Republicans who've opposed a jobs plan that had created a million jobs in the short term, that's filled with ideas that Democrats and Republicans have supported in the past since last September, and pursued a bunch of partisan initiatives instead of taking immediate action to improve the economy. I mean, these are the same people who are holding up a vote on ensuring that taxes on middle-class families don't go up by $2,000 on January 1st when the president has called for immediate action to ensure that doesn't happen.
Well, and you've also got Paul Ryan going after student loans and wanting to slash Pell Grants and increase the money that kids have to pay back their college loans. Ben LeBolt, National Press Secretary for President Obama's reelection. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Carl.
All righty. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in all afternoon, I am Carl Frisch, and we will be right back with more on the Ryan selection for vice president by Mitt Romney.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, we've got the state party chairman for Democrats from Paul Ryan's home state of Wisconsin.
This one comes out from the one turn go. This one comes out from the one who's a horse is behind. A right-wing tool with not much of a mind.
is from Rocky Mountain Mike. You can find him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Rocky Mountain Mike. He does some great jingles and parody songs. He's really quite good at it. That one, the one-term gov, Paul Ryan, is joining the one-term gov. And Paul Ryan, the vice presidential running mate of Mitt Romney, is from the state of Wisconsin. And joining me now to talk about what the reaction to the Paul Ryan selection is on the ground in his home state is Graham Zielinski. He is the communications director for the Wisconsin Democratic Party. Graham, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So, my understanding is that when Paul Ryan returned home to Wisconsin on Sunday, state Democrats were out in full force.
Yeah, we know him here.
I would hope.
Like I said, he's a nice guy. People like the idea that Paul Ryan is getting some national attention, but people in Wisconsin love our grandmas more. We love our parents more. We love our kids more, and we love our Medicare and our Social Security more. So we know him here.
I don't think that Paul Ryan doesn't love your grandparents. I just don't think he loves them more than Ayn Rand.
Right. Yeah, right. I mean, that's, you know, he made his interns read Ayn Rand or Ayn Rand, however you pronounce it. And there's some sisters here from the district who had something to say about that. But
what did they have to say?
Well, they had to say that it's certainly not any Catholic social doctrine that should animate this kind of budget that throws seniors and the most vulnerable under the bus.
Well, it's certainly interesting. I mean, you talk about, you know, they've been saying that he's got like this youthful appeal because he's young. And young people have been turned off from the Republican Party left and right because they're, you know, hostility towards lesbian and gay Americans, choice, et cetera. And Ryan just chalks it up as, you know, this is just the teachings of my Catholic faith. Well, he's kind of being picking and choosing as to what he's going to abide by.
He's very selective. And I think the nuns on the bus said it best when they came here that, you know, if you would have just left it alone and said, look, Ayn Rand told me to do this. But when he directly cited the Catholic social teachings, the Church of the Poor does not favor hedge fund managers or whatever. But
Graham, that hedge fund managers are working on a much larger needle after they read in the Bible that, you know, it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich person to get into heaven.
Yeah, they're working on a grade, I guess.
Yeah.
But back to your point, I mean, we know Paul Ryan here in Wisconsin, and the GOP has been talking a very big game about Wisconsin, but they haven't backed it up with anything yet. This is a state that we went to the president in 2008 by 14 points. There's just no evidence that the Romney campaign is taking Wisconsin seriously. I think what had happened was that he needed to listen to the Tea Party. The Tea Party activists told him to pick
right.
Paul Ryan or else. And it was not done with any calculation about the state of Wisconsin. Like
Heck,
I said,
even John McCain said it reminded of himself choosing Sarah Palin.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And if you want to invite that comparison, it didn't work out so well for John McCain. And certainly in Wisconsin, they rejected Sarah Palin by 14 points here. And, you know, he only represents one end of the state. People know his plan in Wisconsin. Look, we had an open U.S. Senate seat here this term with Senator Cole retiring. It would seem obvious that Paul Ryan would have been the one to step up, and he would have cleared the field with Republicans if he would have tried to run this term. He didn't, because he probably saw the same polls that we saw. It showed that people know his plan and Medicare as we know it. People know what he wants to do, rolling the dice with Social Security. And people are going to reject him here in Wisconsin. I'm very confident about that. So, I mean, he's running around talking about the Packers and the Badgers and the Brewers, which is cute and everything, but it doesn't get to the substance of things.
Well, and he should be talking about the cuts to programs that people like the Wilsons and the Smiths and the Joneses are going to need.
Right, exactly. And look, I mean, he's never needed, lucky for him, he's never really needed any assistance. I mean, things have been pretty good for him, comfortable for him in his life.
Well, I mean, it depends on how you define the word assistance. I mean, the company that that his family built over the last, you know, century survived largely on the federal highway program, building America's highways for the better part of 40 years.
Well, and the kind of the right wing of his party that has forced his nomination won't talk about that. They're more concerned about these Tea Party slogans and these tax cuts for the super wealthy that result in higher taxes on middle class families. That doesn't seem to bother them. It doesn't seem to bother them. The
well, and it's important to pair their plan there, right? It's not just tax cuts for the extremely wealthy and the corporations in this country. It's also severe, dramatic cuts to programs that everyday Americans rely on.
Right, and folks in this district where Paul Ryan's from have just been terribly affected by the shipping of jobs overseas and the outsourcing of jobs to places like China and Mexico. And Paul Ryan has been an advocate of those policies that put his district under the boot all these years. So, look, we have no doubt he loves the Packers. We all love the Packers here. We have no doubt he's got an attractive dude, but his policies are not so nice.
Well, I love the Packers as much as the next person because it's America's only publicly owned sports franchise.
Right.
And that makes my sends a shiver up my leg, to borrow a phrase from Chris Matthews. Graham Zielinski, communications director for the State Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All righty. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom all afternoon. Today I am Carl Frisch. We'll be back after this break with more discussions about the Paul Ryan selection and much, much more. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, I'll tell you why Paul Ryan's youthful vigor won't help the GOP's Democratic death march. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, all afternoon filling in for Tom. I am Carl Frisch. More about me at carlfrisch.com. If you're just joining us, we have been chatting about Mitt Romney's selection of conservative GOP Congressman Paul Ryan as his vice presidential running mate. We'd love to know what you think about Paul Ryan's selection. Give us a call, 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. Is he a stud or is he a dud? That's what I want to know. I don't think he's much of a stud. In fact, if you've been watching much of the media reports over the last several days, you might have noticed that there seems to be a preoccupation with Paul Ryan's supposed youthful vigor. I guess that's what you have to do when you're a party of octogenarians, is point out the fact that you've got a 42-year-old as your running mate. But they've also obsessed about the fact that he's a supposed gym rat. He's a fitness nut who is almost a pro skier, all to paint a very blatant political picture that he's young, he's hip. He even listens to Nirvana on his iPod. How cool is this guy? But they can't mask what's really going on here. The Republican Party has been embarked on for the last several years, a demographic death march. As minority populations grow, as young Americans are able to register in greater and greater numbers to vote in each election, Republicans become less and less relevant. Independent voters don't like Republicans much more either. Anyways, I mean, think about it this way. Independent voters are turned off when they hear people talking about how much they hate gay people. But what do you hear from Republicans? Such hostility. It's no wonder that they're turned off by Republicans. So what is a party to do when the demographics are not going their way? They could change their public policy to attract more of those growing demographics, but not this Republican Party. Instead, they've changed the rules of the game. That's why you've seen in state after state after state, Republican governors and legislatures passing not only voter ID laws, but also making it harder to vote early, making it harder to vote by mail, making it, you know, needlessly complicated to even register to vote in places like Florida. It's all designed to make it more difficult to vote for the very people that are hurting Republicans when it comes to demographics. And the idea that Paul Ryan would somehow help Republicans stem this flow of young people that have been going to the Democratic Party is remarkably funny to me. I mean, this is kind of like when they nominated Sarah Palin because they wanted to attract women voters. Women voters are smarter than the GOP gave them credit for in 2008. They liked Hillary Clinton, yes, and just because Sarah Palin was a woman did not mean that they were going to vote for her. Young people sure would be tempted by a young person if they actually stood up for the policies that young people care about. Paul Ryan would increase, double the rates of student loans. He would slash the number of people eligible for Pell Grants and then make it so that the money you do get if you are lucky enough to get a Pell Grant under Paul Ryan wouldn't go nearly as far, because unlike the president, he wouldn't tie that amount to the cost of inflation, the increase of inflation. So, you know, I've been calling all weekend, I've been calling Paul Ryan. I even do this in my column, which you can read at carlfrisch.com. I've been saying that Paul Ryan is the Benjamin Button of American politics. And much like Brad Pitt, whose portrayal of the character won an Oscar nomination but failed to cinch the big prize at the actual awards, Paul Ryan may have gotten this nomination, but he's not going to win in November, that's for sure. Give us a call toll-free, 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. Let's go to David in Marshalltown, Iowa. Hey, David.
Hi.
How are you?
Okay, I'm doing fine. I'm a truck driver. When Mitt Romney picked Paul Ryan, that was a doomed ticket. He might as well just put a nail in his coffin and say goodbye.
Who would you have picked if you were Mitt Romney?
Wildly. Not, it's hard to tell. I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent. And the other thing I wanted to say is that Iowa just joined the other states for voter suppression.
The state after state have done this. Iowa is particularly bad. I mean, Rachel Maddow, if you want to watch some good video, Rachel Maddow had the Secretary of State of Iowa on her program and just eviscerated him. He didn't know why he was pushing it. He couldn't point to any instances of voter fraud actually happening in Iowa. You know, the Republican Lawyers Association put out a study that showed that less than 0.03% less than 0.03 votes per 150,000 could be found to be cast illegally or in some kind of questionable fashion. So, you know, give the Republicans a non-existent problem, they'll go after it. Show them that you want to talk about getting more jobs to needy Americans, and they'll just ignore you. Let's go to Kirk in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, Kirk.
How are you?
I'm good.
Listen, I just wanted to weigh in. I saw the New York Times bio of Ryan this morning. And it's this narrative of kind of self-reliance on steroids that started at his young age, where the defining moment in his life was the death of his father at age 16.
Which is it's a horrible thing that nobody should have to experience, obviously.
But he then collected survivor's benefits.
Right. Glad you bring up the story. Because it's fascinating if you think about it. Paul Ryan rose to fame during the Bush years as the architect of President Bush's plan to privatize Social Security. So let me just read you a bit from Joan Walsh at Salon.com. Paul Ryan was born into a well-to-do Janesville, Wisconsin family, part of the so-called Irish Mafia that runs the city's construction industry since the 19th century. When his lawyer father died young, sadly the high school-aged Ryan received Social Security survivor benefits, but they didn't go directly to supporting his family. By his own account, he banked them for college. He went to the Miami University of Ohio, paying twice as much tuition as Ohio resident would have. The in-state of University of Wisconsin must have been too good for him. And then, she goes on to write, ironically, Ryan came to national attention trying to dismantle the very program that helped him go to the college of his choice, pushing an even more radical version of President Bush's Social Security privatization plan, which failed. He has since become the scourge of the welfare state, a man wholly supported by government who preaches against the evils of government support. He could be the poster boy for President Obama's supposedly controversial oration about how we all owe our success to some combination of our hard work, family backing, and government support. Let's say it together. You didn't build your career yourself, Congressman Ryan. Couldn't be more spot on. This is a guy who went to college because of Social Security survivor benefits. And when he was done with college, he moved to Washington, where he worked for a bunch of different Republican politicians, including the bigot Sam Brownback, who's now the governor of Kansas, but was a senator at the time, writing speeches for them, and then ran for Congress. By Mitt Romney's own account, this guy is not qualified to be president because he's never worked a day outside of politics in his life. In his life. Let's talk to Andy in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Hey, Andy.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. I just wanted to say that Ryan, I thought, was an excellent pick.
Why is that?
And an excellent conservative pick, and hopefully, you know, get the country back on track.
So why do you think he's an excellent pick?
Just, get the country back on track.
You've obviously put some great thought into this, haven't you?
He's
a great pick. He wants to get the country on track. Why do you support him? He's a great pick. He wants to put the country back on track. So obviously the conservative talking points are only one bullet when it comes to Paul Ryan, which is unfortunate. Let's talk to Tim in San Diego. Hey, Tim, what's on your mind?
How you doing?
All right, we lost the call, but... let's take Kevin in Salem. Hey, Kevin.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. What's on your mind?
Hey, I'm a conservative. I'll start off with that first.
All righty.
And I like Paul Ryan because I'm an ideologue, and I like where he stems from and where he's coming from. I'll say this. Everybody keeps talking about the Ryan budget.
Yes.
And they need to remember that it was the Ryan Wyden budget. Ron Wyden from Oregon help draft the legislation for the Ryan budget.
No, that's not true, sir. Sir, that's not true.
It is true.
No. You want to give me a second to explain? I will. Ron Wyden is a senator, first of all. Second of all, Ron Wyden was interested in talking about fixing Obamacare before it became before it went into effect. So the focus was not on the budget for Ron Wyden. It was on health care reform. And the budget that Paul Ryan authored was not co-authored by any Democrat. It was the budget put forward by the Republican conference in the House. It never saw the light of day in the Senate, sir. So you're wrong, but that's okay. We take all calls, especially from conservatives who don't know what they're talking about. And I love those calls the most. So you go right to the front of the line if you're one of them. 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom all day today and tomorrow. I am Carl Frisch. More about me at carlfrisch.com and more of your calls when we come back after this break.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
More about Jim Nutt, Paul Ryan, with John Nichols of The Nation after this.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program with guest host Carl Frisch. Connect with him on Twitter at Carl Frisch and visit CarlFrisch.com for more information.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom all afternoon today and tomorrow. I am Carl Frisch. As the lady just said, more about me at carlfrisch.com. What do you think the right wing and Fox News would say if Joe Biden was sharing equal billing at a liberal conference with a terrorist, a former terrorist? Do you think they'd go crazy and cover the story hour after hour, segment after segment, nonstop, wall to wall? They probably would. But I want to read you something right now from rightwingwatch.org, which is a project of People for the American Way. The website for the upcoming so-called Values Voters Summit in D.C., hosted by the Family Research Council, features Mitt Romney's running mate side-by-side with former, quote-unquote, terrorist Kamal Saleem. I can't imagine Ryan would appreciate being given equal billing with a former quote-unquote terrorist, but Salim is a big deal on the religious right. Salim, whose real name is Kador Shaimi, claims that he was a Muslim Brotherhood operative who, quote, came to the United States of America to destroy this country, saying that he crossed the Canadian border and brought a weapon cache right through the cities. Somewhere along the way, he converted, got a job at Pat Robertson's Christian Broadcast Network, and became a favorite ex-Muslim of the religious right. As a result, he says his life is constantly in danger and is being pursued by foreign agents. If you're asking yourself why Salim isn't in jail as opposed to speaking at a conference with the likes of Paul Ryan, Michelle Bachmann, Jerry Boykin, and Tony Perkins, it's because Salim is widely considered to be a fraud. So, what do you think about Paul Ryan sharing a stage, sharing equal billing at a right-wing conference with a quote-unquote former terrorist? Would you say that he's palling around with terrorists? 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. Let's talk to Carol in Butte, Montana. Hey, Carol, how are you?
Yeah, I would like to know why, if Paul Ryan banked all his Social Security money, why he isn't in jail for fraud.
Well,
Social Security.
I'm not certain that it is fraud to save the money that you get in survivor benefits. I think you're allowed to do with that what you will. I think the point is that as a person growing up without a father, he took survivor benefits from his father and then paid for college with it. Come his professional career, he's a member of Congress writing laws that would dismantle the very program that helped him succeed in life. It goes back to the whole thing that got the right into an absolute tizzy with President Obama. When President Obama said, you didn't get here on your own, you know, there were people that helped you along the way. There were roads that were built by the government to help your products get to factories and get from factories. There were police that protected you and firemen that kept your place of business from burning down. Paul Ryan doesn't understand what it is to give thanks. He went to college because of Social Security survivor benefits, and then when he got in a position of power, he sought to destroy the very program that gave him his start in life. And that is truly sad, but it's symptomatic of the broader problem with the Republican Party. They believe in pulling themselves up by their own bootstraps, and even if those boots are given to them by the government, they would never say thank you. All righty. Let's talk to Eric in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hey, Eric.
Hello.
Hey.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, what's going on?
All right. Hey, I just wanted to give you kind of an eyewitness report. I spent yesterday afternoon in High Point at the Romney-Ryan rally.
How was it?
And you know, what it reminded me of, honestly, I don't know if you've seen any of the pictures. They've only released, like, two pictures, really, on, like, the final call or whatever that place is called,
yeah.
Roll call. The way it was set up, that was basically where the logjam was to get into the event. And then you didn't see behind that. It was essentially a single-file line around a big building. But no way was it 2 to 3 blocks worth of people.
Well, even if it was...
a stretch of single-file people. Yeah, go ahead.
Eric, why would we be surprised that Republicans wanted to see their new vice presidential running mate? Of course they're going to have a big crowd.
Yeah, I said myself, the picture was perfect the way they set it up, and then they said 10,000, 5,000. I'd say about 3 to 4, which my opinion was impressive for a high school football game, not so much for a newly minted presidential team.
Well, you know, they are America's comeback team, and as I've said already on the program today, they are coming back. They're coming back for your Social Security benefits and your Medicare and your student loans and your jobs and the economic recovery that President Obama and Vice President Biden have been pursuing. So... be on the lookout. You don't want it to happen, so get out there, vote, and do everything you can to stop them from making it happen. Let's talk to Clyde in Franklin, North Carolina. Hey, Clyde.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, you were asking earlier whether or not people thought this guy was a good pick. I think he's a wonderful pick if you compare him to who it could have been. I mean, it could have been. They say that he's good, he's persuasive, and he's been able to win election, you know, in a largely Democratic area in Wisconsin.
Well, it's not largely Democratic, actually. It's pretty much 50-50.
Okay, I'll go for that. But I would much rather have him as a vice presidential pick than someone who is real good at stealing an election, a presidential election, say somebody like Jeb Bush.
Well, you know, Clyde, they don't have to steal the elections outright anymore. That's why they've gone after the laws of which we how we cast ballots and how we register to vote. That's why they have instituted voter ID laws and made it harder for you to vote in person early or vote by mail. Look at what they're doing in Ohio. They changed the law so that the only people who could vote early were members of the military service, and they wouldn't give that opportunity to others. It's why they made it harder for people to register to vote in places like Florida. They won't even allow teachers to be able to easily register their students to vote on their own volition. It's sad and it's sick, and they don't have to steal elections if they can change the rules of the game, and that's precisely what they've done over the last 3 years. But, you know, I think we can overcome it, and it'll make us more powerful as a result. All righty. We've got a lot more coming up on the show with you this afternoon. In the next hour, we'll be talking to Shannon Moore about Sarah Palin not going to the Republican convention. She'll join us live from Alaska. We'll also be talking to Kyrsten Sinema, who could be the first bisexual member of Congress, and she'll be telling us about Gabby Gifford's joyful return to the state of Arizona. More after this break.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom all afternoon today and tomorrow. I am Carl Frisch, Democratic strategist, syndicated columnist. You can find more about me at carlfrisch.com, where you can connect with me on Facebook and Twitter at Carl Frisch. We've got some breaking news I want to give you at the top of this hour. This is according to U.S. News, NBC affiliate in Texas. A police constable and a civilian were killed when a gunman opened fire Monday near the campus of Texas A&M University in College Station. Brian Bachman, 41, the elected constable for Precinct 1 in Bezos County, was fatally injured, as well as a civilian. So, we're not supposed to talk about gun control in times like this, according to the NRA and right-wing conservatives. I don't know what that makes this summer, but that's quite a number of shootings. We had one last week in Chicago or just outside of Chicago, one the week before in Wisconsin in Paul Ryan's district, and the list goes on and on and on. And the question is, when are we going to finally have the conversation we need to have? I've been to more gun shows than probably any right-wing host on the radio combined. My father has dealt guns for a number of years. I grew up shooting guns, and I can tell you that there are some very basic things we could do to protect ourselves as a society against these types of violent accidents and violent shootings. It's just sad that we can't have a conversation about this issue, and the media seems to think that it's not important enough to step in and talk about it. Very sad. But in other sad news, Sarah Palin will not be speaking at the Republican National Convention in Tampa. I know what you're thinking, but Carl, I couldn't have thought of anything better. August, Tampa, Mitt Romney, Sarah Palin. I mean, it sounded like the vacation of your dreams, I'm sure. But sadly, she will not be speaking. In fact, here's what she had to say about the fact that she's not speaking, and I'll do my best Sarah Palin for you. This year is a good opportunity for other voices to speak at the convention, and I am just excited to hear them. Palin, who was Senator John McCain's running mate, said in a statement to Greta Wire, that would be Greta Van Susteren's blog at Fox News, "Everything I said at the 2008 convention about then-candidate Obama still stands today, and in fact, the predictions made about the very unqualified and inexperienced community organizers' plans to fundamentally transform our country are unfortunately coming true." So, Sarah Palin not going to the convention. She also had some comments to make about Paul Ryan's selection as a vice presidential running mate, which John McCain likened to his pick of Sarah Palin. I couldn't have thought of anybody better to chat about this great news for Republicans, because really, as a Democrat, I kind of wanted to see her speak at the convention. Then Shannon Moore, she is the host of the Shannon Moore Show on 1020 AM in Anchorage. Shannon, thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Carl.
So, Sarah Palin, you know, will not be speaking at the thing where they have a lot of people with the rally signs and such and so forth. What do you make of it?
Also.
And also, too.
Also, too, therefore, already. You know, here's the thing. Sarah Palin, it was such a cynical pick for John McCain to make her.
Right.
The vice presidential pick. It was like, okay, there's a bunch of disenfranchised women because Hillary Clinton wasn't chosen by the Democrats. So we'll get them. Let's find someone with a vagina. And it was like really, it was pretty insulting, I think, for a lot of women. And for a lot of men, it was like, whoa, Hello Kitty.
I remember being in Minneapolis, St. Paul, the day that she was announced, because I was out there for the Republican convention after going to the Democratic convention, or, you know, before going to the Democratic convention and after. And I remember sitting at a Starbucks not far from a senior advisor to Mitt Romney, and watching all of these old men with their walkers looking at their jitterbug cell phones, wondering who the heck Sarah Palin was. It was quite something. And then, of course, we learned who she was. It wasn't long before we found out that she liked to read everything and that her founding fathers were all of her favorites. So in my head, the way this probably went down, because if you look at what's happening at the Republican convention in Tampa a little bit later this month, they're not having George W. Bush speak. They're not having Dick Cheney speak. And now we find out that they're not having Sarah Palin speak. So if you're the Republican convention, you've basically said, we're getting rid of our toxic assets. They will not be speaking at our convention. And Sarah Palin, you can tell your supporters however you want to that this is the case. And obviously Sarah Palin doesn't want to be more embarrassed than she is by her daughter's reality show. So she comes out with a statement saying, I'm going to let other people talk.
Well, you know, there's a couple things. First, the day she was announced, she called into the radio show I was on. And it was right before she walked on stage, because we had our TVs on. It was this empty stage, right?
Yeah.
And she called in, and she was like, today's a great day for Alaska and Alaskans. And I said to her, you accepted? And then she's like, I got to go, you know, and
yeah.
Then 2 minutes later, we see her walk out on the television screen, you know, and I was like, you know, that's artificial sugar on a turd pie. That's it right there.
A new meaning to the word aspartame.
And I got fired. I did from that radio show very shortly after.
Well, badge of honor.
Access to her. But, you know, and it didn't take very long. I mean, Keith Olbermann was really quick. I was on very shortly with him talking about Reverend Moosey and, you know, all of these skeletons started, you know, the rape kits that she was charging for when she was mayor. I mean, these horrible stories started coming
right out
about her from Alaskan, you know, bloggers and activists here. But, you know, this whole Paul Ryan thing, he's 20% less approved of by the Republican Party than Palin was at the same time.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, if John McCain, who has to suffer for the rest of his life with the embarrassment of having chosen Palin, is comparing Mitt Romney's selection of Paul Ryan to his pick of Palin, you know you're in deep water.
Yeah, no, it's a problem. And I think, you know, in light of what you were talking about earlier with the shooting at Texas A&M today, you know, it's too soon, by the way, to talk about Aurora. You know, Palin really has been this political fluffer for that gun fetish culture.
Right.
That sort of reload, take aim, you know, putting bullseyes on Gabby Giffords and many other Congress people on a map, you know, and then, you know, being unapologetic for that. And she, seriously, she is a political fluffer. She gets
well, and that her
level up. And
her ability to bolster the base or turn out votes is, some could call that into question after the results in the Missouri Senate primary recently.
Well, you know, she shows up in what looks like an Underoos T-shirt, Superman of her son's, maybe, wearing that and these sort of, you know, pull my hair, spank me sandals. And it's not it's not working. She's not getting the same bite. And, you know, Bristol Palin came out today with this, like, let's pray for Paul Ryan's family because this is going to be a really hard time for them. Like,
well, and, you know, in fairness to Bristol, she values her privacy. So
you got a book, you've got Dancing with the Stars, you've got a reality show, you're in support of traditional marriage now, and that's front running, even though, according to the Bible, you should be stoned for not being a virgin. Like, you know, I look at that family,
Shannon, all of this adds up to the fact that she's not speaking at the Republican National Convention. I was really looking forward to it. I already, you know, ordered up the bottles of champagne. I want to know more about what you think about that and about what she said about Paul Ryan. When we come back after this, we'll talk about that and the Pebble Mine. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch, and we'll be back after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, more with Shannon Moore from Alaska about Sarah Palin's snubbing at the Republican convention this summer.
But can you go back once you know?
You don't know me.
You don't know me at all.
You don't know me.
You don't know me at all.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in all afternoon, I am Carl Frisch here today and tomorrow. If you're just joining us, we've been reporting the very sad news that Sarah Palin will not be speaking at the Republican convention in Tampa. It is a sad day, to be sure. We were all looking forward to August in Tampa with Mitt Romney and Sarah Palin. Nothing sounds better. We also have this quote from Sarah Palin that she put on the Facebook machine about the selection of Paul Ryan as Mitt Romney's running mate. She said, and I quote, "We must now look to this new team, the Romney-Ryan ticket, to provide an alternate vision of an America that is fiscally responsible, strong, and prosperous, an America that understands and is proud of her exceptional place in the world and will respect those who fight to secure that exceptionalism, which includes keeping our promises to our veterans." That was one sentence, by the way, with no periods at the end. She also said, "Obama's vision for America will make the rest of the country look like California, minus the beautiful scenery and warm weather." So we've been chatting with Shannon Moore. She's the host of the Shannon Moore Show out there in Anchorage, Alaska. Shannon, thanks for sticking around.
My pleasure.
So,
oh gosh, it's so
rather
funny
than
reading it because she's got such word salad.
I love it. It's like a really fattening ranch dressing too, on that iceberg wedge. So I'm curious. I'm curious.
By the way, that's guano dressing.
So she's not at the Republican convention in Tampa in a couple weeks, and we certainly know that she's not spending much time in Alaska. You were telling me that when she took that picture at the Chick-fil-A, you were like, "Oh, there's no Chick-fil-A's in Alaska. Where the heck are you?"
Yeah, no, nobody sees them anymore, and that's really probably a good thing for them because they're so wildly unpopular here. Even the people that support her just consider her a quitter. Like, really, I mean, she went from like 85-90% approval ratings at the beginning of her selection. And then she got 61% of the vote. She had already fallen 25 points easily. And then, you know, by the time she quit, and now it's just this continual embarrassment. You know, she was at a Target, shopping one day, and some man started yelling, "Oh my God, it's Tina Fey. I love Tina Fey." And she got really mad and parked her cart and left.
Oh.
So it doesn't surprise me that she's gone to greener pastures where she can binge on Chick-fil-A.
Well, it's greener pastures of Arizona, from what I understand. So she's not very popular. You know, it always occurred to me that what she ended up doing was just taking the big ticket dollar and leaving, because she probably could have held on for another term in Alaska and you know, run for national office if she wanted to. She wouldn't have won, but she probably could have done that. But she would have had to pass up the millions and millions and millions of dollars she's made since being McCain's running mate, right?
Well, that was the thing, was that you can't, as an Alaskan governor, you can't have another paying job.
Right.
So she would not have been able to write her book and do all of this. She wanted to know, well, can I write it when I'm off duty? Well, you're not off duty as the governor.
Right.
So that was, I think, you know, in hindsight, what really drove that was the money. And, you know, she found the money. But as my pop says, you know, Sarah Palin paid a lot for all that money.
Yeah,
and
it's true.
I think that that's, I mean, I look at that and I think, you know what? I don't think it would be worth it. But
yeah,
it's apparently her.
Well, especially if you actually care about the things that you're espousing. But enough about Sarah Palin. The Republican Party seems to not want to talk about her, so let's finish up. The Pebble Mine there in Alaska, it's the pet project of the former Governor Murkowski, who's the father of the current Senator Lisa Murkowski. There's an EPA report out about just how disastrous the Pebble Mine would be for the people of Alaska. Why don't you fill us up with an update on it?
Well, several years ago, I guess now a year and a half ago, there were 11 tribes, Alaska Native tribes, who can trace their lineage back here since before the, you know, Bering Sea Bridge, about 10,000 years that they think these Native folks have been in Alaska. They had been going to the state over and over and asking for help to prevent this pebble mine. It's the largest open pit mine ever proposed in North America, and they proposed it at the headwaters of Bristol Bay, which provides about between 40 and 50% of the nation's seafood. I mean, it is the seafood breadbasket of America, and it has no enhancement. It's all completely wild runs. There's no hatcheries,
yeah,
no farming, nothing. It's very pristine, and, you know, as much as I love to fish, I'm out there quite a bit. But they wanted to put this in, and so we've been fighting it here. We could not, you know, Frank Murkowski was governor. He was such an unpopular governor. He's what really brought in Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin even sold it out and went with the money of Pebble Mine and back down to them after she had taken on oil companies. It was very strange. And then her predecessor, Sean Parnell, is just, he's worse than Palin. And I'm not kidding. People here are like, wow, didn't know I would miss Sarah Palin. He's that bad. So these tribes and local groups went to the federal government and asked for an EPA assessment. It took them about a little over a year to do it. And their assessment was, this mine will damage the fisheries, even if everything goes perfectly, which, you know,
doesn't happen.
It's not going to go perfectly.
Right.
That doesn't happen. So right now, Lisa Murkowski is trying to protect her daddy's legacy and saying the federal government has no business in Alaska. Well, those watersheds flow right into federal waters. The EPA has every right to pull the 404C. They're completely within their bounds. And we're really hopeful that the federal government and that Barack Obama will see that the locals here need this. They need the protection.
Shannon,
the state has been sold out.
We're coming up on the end of a hard break. What can people do listening at home to help make sure that this is protected?
If they could go to savebristolbay.org and sign on or send a note to the president that just says protect Bristol Bay.
All right, you heard that. Savebristolbay.org. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Thanks a lot, Shannon, for joining us today. We'll be right back after this with more great talk. We'll be talking to Kyrsten Sinema. She could be the first openly bisexual member of Congress in history. Up next.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Gabby Giffords has returned home to Arizona. Up next, we'll talk to Kyrsten Sinema about how great that is.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program with guest host Carl Frisch. Connect with him on Twitter at Carl Frisch and visit carlfrisch.com for more information.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in all afternoon today and tomorrow. I am Carl Frisch, and we've got some really great news out of Arizona. Former Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords has moved back to Tucson with her husband, retired astronaut Mark Kelly. They've bought a house in Tucson. She's been in Houston ever since the shooting that happened about 18 months ago in rehabilitation with specialists in Houston. I wanted to chat. You know, the political landscape in Arizona is changing by the month, it seems. They've had a lot of redistricting going on out there, and you know, there's a great candidate there named Kyrsten Sinema, who is running for Congress in the 9th District. And I wanted to chat with her first about what it means that Gabby Giffords is finally home in Arizona, and then also a little bit about her campaign. Let's play a little bit from a television spot that Kyrsten has running right now, if we could.
These guys don't get it. They're more focused on dictating women's personal health care decisions, like birth control, than getting our economy back on track. I'll bring people together and work with both parties without sacrificing my progressive values, like I did when I took on Governor Brewer to stop cuts in local schools and protect children's health care. I'm Kyrsten Sinema. I sponsor this ad because the only way to change Washington is to change the people we send there.
Joining me now to talk about the return of Gabby Giffords to Arizona and her campaign for Congress is Kyrsten Sinema. Kyrsten, thanks for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure to be with you, Carl. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. So, first question out of the gate, what does it mean to the people of Arizona that Gabby Giffords is finally home?
Well, you know, this is huge for all of us in Arizona, but no one is more impacted than the people of Tucson. You know, having Gabby, first of all, survive that horrific day was a miracle. And then to see her transformation over the last year and a half of just really intense therapy just makes all of us feel so lucky that she's back home with us. And I tell you, we were all celebrating when we heard the great news that Gabby was coming home.
I imagine, you know, you're in the middle of a hotly contested congressional run yourself. I imagine when you, at the end of a long week, you might think to yourself, this is nothing compared to what Gabby's gone through over the last 18 months. I can do this.
I tell you, Carl, I think most of us think that every single day. You know, what Gabby has survived is beyond that which, you know, 99% of people in this world would have been able to survive. And her spirit of just keeping positive and working hard and never giving up, that's really what's best about Arizona. And so, you know, she not only inspires me, I think she inspires all of us every day.
So one thing that people listening at home might not know about me and might not know about you, I am a board member for the Victory Fund, which is an organization that helps to elect gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender elected officials throughout the country, believing that it's better to have representation of the LGBT community in our elected officials' ranks. We end up seeing more equality as a result of it. And you could be the first openly bisexual member of Congress elected in the country. It's not your focus, obviously. You're focused on jobs and other issues. How's the campaign going?
Yeah, the campaign's going really well. We've been polling in first place in a three-way race for the last 6 months, so we're feeling good and strong and confident as we head into these last 2 weeks. But, you know, perhaps not surprisingly, Carl, we just had another incident on Saturday. There have been two unregistered illegal campaigns attacking me in the past about month and a half. The second one just surfaced on Saturday. And so, I mean, this is well beyond Citizens United. These are groups that are using fake names, fake websites, fake phone numbers, and are just spending money to spread malicious lies and attacks against me with no accountability, none whatsoever. So we know the stakes are high in this election. And
how do you
know
trace something like that?
Don't want me to win. Well, I'll tell you what we do. We just keep our head up and we keep working. You know, you played the spot of our television commercial, and we want to keep airing that on TV. And so I fundraise pretty much all day long every day to ask people to help me continue to share that positive message.
Why don't you just go get a corporation to pay for the whole thing? I mean, come on. It's a post-Citizens United country.
Yeah, so I actually opposed Citizens United. I felt like it was an inappropriate decision. But I'll tell you what's happening in this race, Carl, is even beyond that. Because even under Citizens United,
right,
if you're going to attack someone, you have to at least tell the federal government who you are. And in this race, we have secret, shady, unregistered groups attacking me. So,
and it goes against the very culture of what it means to be in politics in Arizona, too. I mean, this is a state that had some of the best campaign finance regulations in the country for a very long time. And to hear that news is just disappointing.
Well, what's disappointing is that there are some people who just choose to break the law. I mean, I got to be honest, I was surprised by it when it started a month ago, and I was surprised by it again on Saturday. And all we can conclude from it is that we must be doing something right.
Right.
There are some people who are so scared about the prospect of us winning this election that they're willing to break the law.
In addition to being a voice for the LGBT community, one of the things that I find fascinating about you is your background and what brought you into politics. You tell a story of being extremely poor and, I believe, living out of an abandoned gas station for a time as a child.
That's right, Carl. When I was a kid, my family hit tough times. And when my dad lost his job, as happened with many families in the 80s, you know, there was a recession. My dad lost his job. My parents got divorced. And next thing you know it, you know, I was homeless. So for 2 years, as a child, we lived in an abandoned gas station. And, you know, we didn't have running water. We didn't have electricity. We didn't always have food to eat. And we really struggled. But my family was able to come out of that. And I went on to, you know, get a Pell Grant and a scholarship to college. I became a social worker, later an attorney, then served 7 years in the Arizona State Legislature. And obviously now I'm running for Congress. And
well, you mentioned the Pell Grant. It must hit awfully close to home when you hear that Mitt Romney has selected Paul Ryan as his running mate. Paul Ryan, who would just absolutely kill the Pell Grants program, making it almost impossible to qualify for them, and then making certain that Pell Grants wouldn't pay for as much as they used to.
Well, it's clear that it's clear that Paul Ryan was never in a situation where he needed help to make it through college.
Well, it's funny you should say that. I was reading this piece from Joan Walsh at Salon. He actually got survivor. You know, it was unfortunate. His father died when he was 16, and he collected the survivor benefits from Social Security and used those to pay for college, which is great. I think it was awesome that he was capable of having the funds to go to college. But then, you know, as a member of Congress, he cut his teeth trying to destroy Social Security. So,
and I'll tell you, you know, Carl, my grandma lives on Social Security and Medicare. Those are the only two sources of income she has to take care of herself. And, you know, she's got Alzheimer's now. And I look at my grandma, who was widowed at the age of just 27, raised three kids on her own, working full-time, minimum wage at FERS Cafeteria in South Tucson. And, you know, all she has to live on today is Social Security and Medicare. And I see folks like Paul Ryan and, frankly, one of my opponents who's interested in privatizing Social Security. And I think to myself, you should meet my grandma because she needs this. She worked hard her entire life. She earned these benefits. And what we can't do is say to seniors who work their whole lives, no, thank you. We're not going to help you after all you've done for us.
It's sad. But, I mean, if you think about it, so many people that grew up in middle-class families, much like mine, I grew up in a middle-class family, wouldn't have ever had a middle-class family existence if it had not been for programs like Social Security and Medicare, making sure that their grandparents were taken care of.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, there are folks in our race, unfortunately, even one of my Democratic opponents who's interested in partial privatization of Social Security.
Well, why not bet it on the stock market? It's worked so well for us, having our economy tied up in that mess.
Well, and that's what I said. My response was, you know, if you had done that, my grandma would be homeless today. She wouldn't have a home. She wouldn't have food. She wouldn't have anything in her old age. And that's just a dangerous and risky proposal. We can't take the hard-earned money of American citizens and gamble it away.
I wouldn't want
anyone to do that to me.
In the economic collapse in 07, 08, I lost two-thirds of my 401k. Imagine if all of your retirement, you know, companies don't offer pensions like they used to anymore, and the Republicans have made it easier to raid pensions. So imagine if every penny you've stashed away so that you can have a retirement that is livable were just gone in the snap of fingers.
That's exactly right. And that's why I think this election is so important. Not only our congressional race, but our national election is so important. It really is a question of whether or not we want to provide security for Americans or whether we want to leave them out fending for themselves. And to take their hard-earned money that they paid in, right? We pay into Social Security. We pay into Medicare. To gamble that money away is to say to the electorate, we don't care as much about you as you care about this country.
Well, and the idea that you could replace, the idea that you could replace Medicare with, you know, something like those coupons you get from Bed Bath & Beyond every Saturday for 15% off is just completely illogical. And what it points to is the idea that these people that are proposing these changes are not really in favor of these programs to begin with, and this is one quick way to dismantle them. Kyrsten Sinema, I want to thank you for joining us today on the Tom Hartman program and encourage folks. They can go to kyrstensinema.com, right, to see
That's
more
right.
about your campaign?
That's right, KirstenCinema.com. And I'll tell you, if there are listeners out there who think to themselves, I want to help someone, now's the time to help, because, you know, we're under attack from these secret groups. And it's an important 2 weeks we're facing.
Yeah, two more weeks. Get out there, sign up, give her some cash if you can. KirstenCinema.com. That's KirstenCinema.com. You can just Google it as well. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch, and we will be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, we'll get an update on news of the day with Talk Radio News Service.
Ain't that good news? Man, ain't that news? Ain't that news?
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom today, I am Carl Frisch. Just some housekeeping. I will be on the War Room with Jennifer Granholm tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Current Television, so be sure to tune in. You can visit carlfrisch.com for more details and more about me. But joining us now to give us an update on what's happening in the world is Victoria Jones from the Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much. And the center of the world might as well have been Iowa today, seeing as President Obama was campaigning there, and Representative Paul Ryan, the new vice presidential nominee to be, was also campaigning there. And Presidential Obama ripped into Republican vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan, saying too many members of Congress are blocking the farm bill from becoming law. Governor Romney's new running mate, he's one of the leaders of Congress standing in the way. If you see him, tell him how important it is. Tell him to put politics aside when it comes to doing the right thing for rural America and for Iowa.
That's the kind of fire in the belly that I think a lot of progressives would be happy to hear.
Well, he certainly had it. And, of course, today he also announced significant support for ranchers and farmers from the executive branch addressing the drought, saying he's directed the Agriculture Department to buy up to $150 million of meat and poultry and catfish to help relieve farmers and ranchers. And he's also been pushing passage of the farm bill. Now, actually, even more pointed than the president was Tom Vilsack, the agricultural secretary, former governor of Iowa, as I remember. He said, take a look at the Ryan budget. Take a look at what it does to farm families. It destroys the safety net.
That's right. And you know, this is a message I think we're probably going to hear time and time again in state after state.
Oh, absolutely, we are. And you're going to hear from the other side. The Romney campaign saying that Ryan hails from an agriculture estate and supported disaster relief. And the truth is, no one will work harder to defend farmers and ranchers than the Romney-Ryan ticket and firing back at Obama. And also, interestingly, blaming the Senate for failing to extend a short-term measure that the House had passed. Now, this is fascinating because, of course, the Senate had passed a truly bipartisan, I mean, with a lot of Republican votes, five-year farm bill.
Right.
And when they were passed the very small, jammed through House bill that went through in the last week of session with just a very few Democratic votes, they said, we're not going to take this up. It's rubbish.
And, well, yeah, they wanted something that had more permanence and that would actually, you know, take some long-term effect, instead of repeatedly having these Republican efforts just to keep things going long enough so that if they get the White House and have both branches of Congress or both houses of Congress, they can do whatever they want.
Right. The upshot, of course, being that there is no farm bill.
Right. And there's no jobs bill and there's no, you know, highway bill. And you know, the Democrats are pushing for these long-term solutions. And it just seems like the Republicans are playing politics here. I mean, I'm constantly reminded of what Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said when President Obama became president, which is our number one goal is to deny this man a second term.
Interesting.
Yeah. What else is happening out there? Anything else that's not Obama or Romney Ryan related?
Yes, as a matter of fact, the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee today filed a civil lawsuit in federal court against Attorney General Eric Holder for failing to turn over documents related to Fast and Furious, the gun tracking operation. Sarah Leifer, the Republican chairman, said the move was in response to a political maneuver by President Obama to exert executive privilege over these documents that they wanted, saying waiting nearly 8 months after the subpoena had been issued to exert a meritless claim of privilege, the president's decision was a calculated political maneuver designed to stop the release of documents until after November's election.
When you said Daryl Issa, I could have sworn you were going to say that he was launching an investigation into the banking scandals. But I'm guessing that's not happening. No? Okay.
No. But I think they have launched an investigation, or will. I think there are going to be hearings in the Senate.
Well, I certainly hope so, and I hope that they're bipartisan and that the Republicans actually show up for the hearings.
Oh, I think there is a lot of rage, actually, about LIBOR, which always reminds me of a lubricant in the Senate.
Well, that's certainly interesting.
That's just me. Also, I would say, very interesting poll coming out that's saying that Americans, this is a new USA Today Gallup poll released today, saying that a plurality of Americans are not enthusiastic about Mitt Romney's selection of Paul Ryan as his running mate. 42% viewed his candidacy as fair or poor. 39% said it was excellent or pretty good.
Well, I actually am getting a report right now from the field that Paul Ryan is saying that he's got foreign policy experience. In fact, he can see Milwaukee from his front porch.
Well, interestingly, the campaign, when asked about this, did say that as chairman of the Budget Committee, he takes calls from generals and from other people involved in the foreign policy world and answers their questions on budgetary issues. And so these things, these interactions and things, have given him considerable foreign policy experience. And that is direct, I swear that is what they said.
Well, I mean, I suppose there is, we know what those calls are about. They're basically saying we want more money, so don't cut us in the budget. Protect our money.
He did, if you remember, accuse generals of lying about their needs in the budget when they testified earlier this year.
Right. You've had lots of people come forward and say that we don't need this or that. But, you know, it's the Republicans in Congress that are propping up the industrial military complex. So if they're in control, we're not going to see any cuts.
The final thing I've mentioned is that top Pentagon administration officials anticipated the massive shakeup in Egypt's senior military leadership and are confident the change will not affect military relations between the U.S. and the fledgling democracy, the administration said today.
Well, that certainly sounds hopeful. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, thanks for filling us in on what's happening in the world today.
Thank you.
All righty. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch. In the next hour, we will be joined by Marcos Melitzis from Daily Kos, who will tell us who he thinks Harry Reid's source is about Mitt Romney's taxes. You won't want to miss it. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good afternoon. This is Carl Frisch filling in for Tom Hartman this afternoon and tomorrow. More about me at carlfrisch.com, where you can sign up for my email list and find ways to connect with me on Twitter and Facebook at Carl Frisch. We've been talking about Paul Ryan, vice presidential running mate for Mitt Romney, announced this weekend. It's not surprising that Romney would be announcing his running mate. In fact, I'd been waiting for it for days because it has seemingly finally pushed some very unflattering stories about Romney off the headlines, namely, give us your taxes, Mitt Romney. And, you know, one of the things I read last week that I thought was remarkable was Marcos Melisit's kind of sleuthing of trying to figure out where exactly Harry Reid came up with who exactly Harry Reid's source was for the idea that Mitt Romney paid no taxes for a number of years. Marcos wrote on Daily Kos, Harry Reid has a Republican source who has told him that Mitt Romney didn't pay taxes in 10 years. who could he possibly know that would have that information? Former Utah Governor John Huntsman's dad sounds like the likely source. John Huntsman Sr. is business partners with Robert C. Gray, who also happens to be Bain's managing director between 1989 and 2004. And if anyone knows the machinations Bain used to evade taxes for itself and its partners, well, it would be the guy in charge of the firm's finances. Huntsman is also a Republican and Mormon, like Harry Reid. As governor of next door Utah, his son, who also served in the Obama administration as ambassador to China, likely developed a close working relationship on regional issues. Want more? The Huntsman family gave some serious scratch to Reid's reelection campaign, and he goes on. Do we have Marcos? Marcos, thanks for joining us.
Great to see you, Carl.
Absolutely. So, walk us through a little bit about how you came to the determination that it just might be John Huntsman Sr. whispering in Harry Reid's ear about Mitt Romney's taxes.
Well, I think from the start I'll say that Huntsman Sr. has actually denied being the source. I don't think I believe it.
Yeah. Well, didn't Mark Feldman deep throat deny being the source for a number of years?
Well, you know, the circumstantial evidence, and it is circumstantial, it's actually very, very, very compelling as far as I'm concerned. There's probably three people who know what Romney's taxes look like. One is his accountants, and I'm going to assume that they're going to not speak because they're
sure
required to, and I would hope that they wouldn't speak because that's not what, you know, they're supposed to keep that stuff
their ethics, right.
Right, exactly. His family, which I get that everybody hates Romney. Even his friends don't really like him. So who knows? Maybe somebody in his family. But I'm going to assume, for the sake of argument, that it wasn't somebody in his family.
There's not some sixth Romney son that we don't know about.
Exactly.
Like with a name like Gorb or something.
So the last person that would know is going to be the person who essentially created the financial mechanisms to evade those taxes. And that is Bain's managing director. I mean, that's his job, is to route those profits in a way that the partners don't have to actually pay any money. And here's a guy who basically managed those finances for most of the years that Romney was at Bain. Basically through he was there after Romney had left. He was there until 2004. So
right.
This guy knows the numbers. He happens to be business partners with John Huntsman Sr. Huntsman Sr. has also received $600 million in Bain investment in one of his businesses. He has a investment firm now. For all we know, he's got some money invested in Bain as well. And obviously there's some bad blood between the Huntsmans and the Romneys, some of it going to earlier this year in the
sure
primary. Not to mention they're all Mormons, so we don't know what kind of backstage, behind the scenes, internal Mormon politics are happening, but
behind,
you know,
closed temple doors.
Exactly. Every, you know, what, one thing we've noticed this election that's actually been surprising even to me is how little people like Romney. You know, the whole story about him bullying that kid. That
right
was supposed. Those the people who talked about that to that reporter. They were given their names were given to the reporter by the Romney campaign.
Right.
They were going to write a fluff piece, and they said, "Can you give us the name of some of your friends?" And those are the, quote, friends that the Romney campaign gave him.
And then my favorite is that after that story came out, the Romney campaign, it came out from people who were being contacted, that the Romney campaign was looking for more friends to defend Romney from what his other friends were saying. So if the first group of friends you give a reporter are the ones that are saying this, what are the people that you didn't initially give going to say about you?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was clear that people don't like him. They may pretend to like him because he's got money and he's got power. And I could see, given the how much of a bully he was in high school, it was a convenient way for those quote friends to avoid being bullied themselves, is to go along with the crowd and that way
sure
sort of being a target. So when his own friends are turning him in, now who knows what's going on behind closed doors in the world of internal Mormon politics. So whatever the reasons, I mean, you put it all together and there's just nobody else. Nobody else who would have access to Reid. And, of course, you know, as you mentioned when you were reading my piece, that the Huntsman Sr. gave and his family gave over $25,000 to Harry Reid for his reelection bid last year. So they're clearly very, very friendly. This is not a $200 Internet donation.
Right.
Real money. So they're clearly friendly. And it just makes sense. I mean, it fits together in a way that I just can't imagine anybody else would possibly fit.
Well, speaking of Mitt Romney's taxes, we now know that Paul Ryan had to give several years of his taxes to the Romney team for his vetting, but that he will also only be releasing 2 years of taxes. I'm not terribly surprised that Mitt Romney would pick Paul Ryan. If you look at his tax plans, Mitt Romney makes out like a bandit with the Ryan tax plans. What do you make of...
He would pay less than 1%.
Yeah. What do you make of the selection?
I mean, it was a brilliant and fantastic move for Romney to lock down the conservative vote. I'm glad he's still trying to lock down that conservative vote in August.
Right.
For the election year.
Have you ever heard of anything more exciting than August in Tampa with Mitt Romney, by the way?
They're going to have to smuggle Paul Ryan into the state. I mean, it was a great move. I mean, it made everybody happy. How often do you have bipartisan cheering of Burr? I mean, Republicans are happy because the conservatives are happy because they showed Romney who's who, right? That was the guy. I mean, they're going to show him who's boss. And Democrats are happy because we're going to win in November. So really, it's a win.
Lock it down for us. It's bizarre to me. I mean, there was no louder applause from the Romney supporters, or supporters in quotation marks, than when he announced Paul Ryan and called him the next president of the United States.
The way I've been writing it, which is, cracks me up, is instead of the Romney-Ryan ticket, I like calling it the Ryan in all caps and then Romney lowercase with parentheses around it. Because, when you talk to conservatives, I mean, it's all about Ryan. That's what's getting them excited because they hate Romney just like everybody else. I mean,
what does it say about the Republican Party today that in back-to-back elections, the candidate not favored by the actual party wins the nomination and then is forced to pick a crazy person for their running mate?
I don't know what it says. It says it's very dysfunctional, I guess.
Well, it's strange. I mean, because, the party is very top-down and they're still controlling much of what the party, ends up doing with itself. I wonder if the party can still pick the nominee, but they've got to do something, to keep the base intact.
I guess what it tells us is that Republicans still, at least the primary electorate, can be bought by money, because the amount of super PAC dollars that were spent to destroy every single one of Mitt Romney's potential opponents or potential or front runners was immense, and systematically they mowed them down.
It's all about money. Marcos, can you stick around for a minute?
Sure.
All right. This is the Tom Hartman Program. We're talking to Marcos Melitzis from Daily Kos about Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan, and much more. Stick around, and we'll be back after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, more with Marcos Melitzis from Daily Kos. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom today and tomorrow. I am Carl Frisch. More about me at carlfrisch.com. Of course, that music is from our good friend Rocky Mountain Mike. You can find him on Facebook at facebook.com/Rocky Mountain Mike. We are joined by Marcos Melitzis. He is the founder of DailyKos.com. Marcos, you've got a great post up right at the top of the front page of Daily Kos right now about the shotgun wedding of Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. Why don't you walk us through it? Because to read Politico, they made it sound like the smartest rollout of a vice presidential campaign ever, with great espionage and tricks of the dark arts.
The Romney campaign's doing a fantastic job, or trying to.
He ran through a forest, Marcos. That means that he's really fit and young, so he's going to get young votes.
Yeah, it was a kind of a joke of a rollout. I mean, first of all, Friday nights are when you release the bad news, not when you release what's supposed to be good news.
It's called the Washington dumpster dump.
or Friday bad news dump. I mean, there's nothing positive about leaking it on a Friday. That's what they did. And so number one, horrible time to release the information. Two, They had everybody, all their supporters, download this stupid app that was going to give them first notice of who
but
the nominee.
But they did spell America right on that app this time. This time.
Progress. Well, unless that application was called Twitter, those people got screwed because the news was long before.
Hours and hours.
They sent that information to their supporters. Third of all, okay, let's say that they leaked by accident on Friday, and they really meant to make this big splash on Saturday morning.
Right.
Saturday, still not a good day to release big news, particularly not when it's the last Saturday of the Olympics. So not just that the Olympics are happening, but like the most exciting finales, volleyball finale and the soccer finale and the basketball finale. I mean, this is not a day.
Well, you know, the Romneys probably thought about it for a second. They said, well, Rafalka is not performing that day. Our dancing horse has the day off.
Well, none of his sport owner friends really had invested in that day either, so he didn't know even it existed. So it was then he has this event in front of the USS Wisconsin, and I guess they're trying to highlight that Paul Ryan is from Wisconsin, not that Wisconsin is even a swing state this year. It's been,
right.
You know, Wisconsin's solidly blue. But, I mean, they really ended up highlighting the fact, because I saw it in a lot of stories, well, neither of them served in the military. In fact, this is the first Republican ticket that doesn't have a veteran on it, and I mean that very loosely, because George Bush...
And neither one of them have military or, you know, foreign policy experience. The best Paul Ryan can muster is that he can see Milwaukee from his house.
So essentially, this battleship in the background was cognitive dissonance. I mean, what did it have to do with the ticket? It had nothing to do with their message.
I tell you, it's all about what we heard all weekend, the youthful vigor that Ryan is bringing to the ticket. He's young. He's hip. He listens to Nirvana. I mean, this is what they're peddling because the demographics play so poorly in their favor. They've got to have a young guy, but he's only young on the exterior. He's like Benjamin Button. He's a 70-year-old man trapped in the body of a young man.
Yeah, but this is what I don't understand. And maybe they actually think that Ryan can win the youth vote as much as Sarah Palin could win the female vote. Maybe they actually believe that somehow.
They thought that Jack Kemp could win the youth vote. There were signs at the Republican convention in 1996 that said Kemp is the dude.
Right. So, but here's what's crazy, right? They have one reliable constituency left. One. Old white people. That's it. They've now put that in play. They're not going to get the youth vote, obviously.
Right.
They now put, and this is how bad it is with the senior vote. There's an organization of, it's a conservative response to the AARP, right?
Right.
They were too liberal by supporting.
It's called senior something or other.
It's called Mature People. Yes, American Association of Mature People. That's what it is. AMP of Mature People. Good branding there. And they released what's supposed to be a positive press release earlier this morning, talking about how 83% of their supporters, of their members, approve of Paul Ryan pick. That means that 17% of the most right wing, crazy wacko seniors don't approve.
But if you listen to the Romney team spokespeople, the reason that Paul Ryan is not joining Mitt Romney on the Florida leg of his bus trip the week of the announcement of Paul Ryan has nothing to do with Paul Ryan's position on Medicare.
Well, the Florida newspapers were absolutely brutal on Sunday morning. Of course, the highest circulation day of the week, right? And the Sunday morning papers in Florida were all about, what was Romney thinking? This is going to kill him in Florida. I mean, it was one horrible headline for Ryan after another. So, and given that Florida, if you look at the map right now, it actually looks very poorly for Mitt Romney. I mean, I've been making the case the last week that this race, we're winning this race, and we're winning it big. And I've been arguing it's time to run up the score and just crush him because we've got the boot on Mitt Romney's neck.
Well, and we have to keep running it up. We can't rest on our laurels because this is a country that elected George Bush 1.5 times, right?
But like I say, you know, when Peyton Manning is winning a game, you know, they don't think, oh, you're 10 points down. We can't pretend, you know, we can't acknowledge that we're winning. No, of course you acknowledge that you're winning. And then what you do is you go on the offensive because the best defense is a good offense. So
let's fight like a Republican in a knife fight. They put the knife in. They twist it, you fall to the ground, and they break your neck. We can't put them in the hospital, in the ride to the hospital.
And this is what happened in 2010. I mean, the Democrats were demoralized and Republicans kept pressing their advantage all the way through Election Day. And it worked out really well for them last election. It's our turn to return the favor. But Florida is one of the few battleground states that Obama won that is actually still competitive, because most of the states are – Ohio's not looking very competitive. Pennsylvania is pretty much out of reach for Romney. Florida's probably
– it could end up being a great year for us. And people can follow more about the election day today. Marcos Melisis from Daily Coast, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
And you can follow him on Twitter at Marcos, M-A-R-K-O-S, and also read his work at dailycoast.com. This is the Tom Hartman Program, and we will be back with more after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, we will meet more about Paul Ryan, the climate denier, Koch acolyte, and Rand fetishist.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program with guest host Carl Frisch. Connect with him on Twitter at Carl Frisch and visit carlfrisch.com for more information.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in all afternoon. This is Carl Frisch, Democratic strategist, syndicated columnist. More about me at carlfrisch.com. We've been talking a lot about Paul Ryan today, and with good reason. He's the right-wing congressman from Wisconsin, the House budget chairman that Mitt Romney picked to be his running mate. Much of the conversation about Ryan thus far in the media has been about his positions on economics, on the budget, on Medicare, and wanting to kill that program. Not a lot has been said about other issues when it comes to Paul Ryan, and I thought it'd be a good opportunity to chat with our good friend Brad Johnson, who is the campaign manager for Forecast the Facts, which you can find at forecastthefacts.org, and you can also follow him on Twitter at ClimateBrad. Brad Johnson, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
So
great to talk with you, Paul.
You've got a great piece up over at Think Progress, Climate Progress, that puts into perspective a lot of other issues, particularly around the environment when it comes to Paul Ryan. But the title is great. Meet Paul Ryan, Climate Denier, Conspiracy Theorist, Koch Acolyte. Tell us more.
That I did try to sum it up there. Paul Ryan, I mean, in many ways, Paul Ryan, it's funny because in certain ways, Paul Ryan is nothing special for today's Republican Party.
Sure.
Other than, I suppose, his consistency and also the way it fits in with his extremely ideological economic and societal worldview.
Are you saying that he's not a fresh face that is injecting youthful vigor into the Mitt Romney campaign?
I'm not going to touch that one. But just, you know, if you simply look at his words and his voting record, he really, it's, you know, you're talking aggressive attacks on climate science and a really consistent policy of voting against efforts to fight climate pollution from fossil fuels, and not only that, but also efforts to prepare for climate change, to deal with the consequences of extreme weather and, you know,
well, to even study climate change further, really, right?
Right, exactly.
Which is interesting when you consider that most climate deniers will usually take the skeptic's view and say, oh, we need to study more. He doesn't even want to study more.
Well, I mean, I think one thing to recognize is essentially the entire Republican caucus, House caucus of this generation is on record opposing, not taking a skeptic view, but actually accusing scientists of conspiracy and voting, you know, against even admitting that, you know, climate change exists.
Well, that flies in the face of the picture being painted of Ryan right now by the press, that he's some thoughtful, wonky, you know, in the policy minutia up to his elbows kind of guy.
Well, I mean, in one sense, you could say that. I mean, he is up to the policy minutia. It's just the policy minutia of conspiracy theorists. And I think that's, it's not that he doesn't have lots of kind of factoids at his disposal. It's just that they're unhinged from reality. And that's like what's most troubling about the vision of Paul Ryan, because it's one where he talks about, you know, the government spending. He talks about the budget and Social Security and things like that being this a fundamental moral challenge for the future of this nation and for our country. And he deliberately avoids what is kind of the truest kind of and most dangerous deficit that this generation is leaving the future, which is the, you know, the destruction of our atmosphere.
Right.
For the profit of companies like Koch Industries, who, and the Koch brothers. The reason that I mentioned the Koch isolate is, other than the tens of thousands of dollars that he's received from Koch Industries, he also spoke at the Koch brothers' secret gathering of the other conservative billionaires and ideological elite in Palm Springs recently.
Yeah, that's one of those confabs that draws a who's who of the powerful interests that fund the party and serve in government and in the media.
Right, and that's what's so interesting is it's not just the funders, but it's also kind of the idea generators. And so Paul Ryan is part of this machine that is constructing their own reality. It's a reality that it has to, for it to exist, for this this vision of the world in which basically big oil are the good guys, and, you know, grandmothers and students and young people and immigrants are the bad guys. It's a reality where you have to actually accuse climate scientists of making up information.
How are we sliding backwards on these issues? I mean, look at George W. Bush, okay? He supported civil unions for gay couples. Mitt Romney doesn't support marriage equality. He doesn't support civil unions. He doesn't support domestic partnerships. George Bush admitted that global warming was at least in part caused by human behavior. And these guys are in full flight from reality on all scores.
Well, I mean, I think in many ways it's unfortunate, you know, and it's difficult, but this is actually a sign of progress. It's only when there's a real opportunity and chance for change, when it actually becomes possible for societal progress, when the nation is actually ready to grapple with these issues, that's when you see the organized opposition, the,
right,
you know, the interest fighting back. And so this kind of hard craziness is actually a sign that oil companies, people like the Koch brothers, like ExxonMobil, like the coal industry, like that they actually recognize that they're threatened, that they may actually be called to task for poisoning our weather, for, you know, putting the future of civilization at risk just for profit.
Well, and how do Paul Ryan's views on these issues square with the views of Mitt Romney?
That is a difficult question to ask, because it's often difficult to discern what are the views.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a presidential candidate who is less defined politically and policy-wise than his running mate.
I mean, outside from, I would say, a consistent policy of serving his own interests and serving the interests of the kind of the economic elite that Mitt Romney has always surrounded himself with. And so Paul Ryan's views are very consistent with that, and they're certainly consistent with the people who are funding the Romney campaign, and, you know, they're entirely consistent with the ideological leadership of the Tea Party.
So the Koch brothers must be, you know, through the moon excited that one of their investments got picked up in the portfolio of Mitt Romney.
Yeah, that's my understanding. I'm not entirely. I haven't been paying too much attention, but I believe that Americans for Prosperity may have already announced their happiness at Paul Ryan's.
It wouldn't have been surprising to me if they actually knew about it in advance, frankly.
Now, I would just like to point out that that is a conspiracy theory. So that's more.
See, that's the difference between the left and the right, is that we're willing to point them out and speculate and say that it is, you know, just you know, speculation. But the right speculation is fact. So, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show today, Brad. You can find more from Brad online at forecastthefacts.org, and also follow him on Twitter at ClimateBrad. Brad Johnson from forecastthefacts.org, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.
All righty. If you're just joining us, we've been talking about Paul Ryan for most of the show today. We're taking your calls, 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. Let's go to Jerry in Long Island, New York. Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, hi. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, you're right. It's all right, and your guests are cool. It's all right with respect to the Ryan pick and everything. Although, before I get that, I also want to say that you're right on the gun control issue. This is a conversation we need to have. This
now, Jerry, now is not the time to talk about gun control. There was a shooting today.
Okay. Let me get to. That's what the NRA and the supporters
right.
are saying. But the fact of the matter is, it's being treated like a taboo subject, like the elephant in the room, again, even against the backdrop of all this gun-related violence. And rhetorically, before I move on to Ryan, rhetorically, I would ask everyone to think of that. How many more Americans have to die senselessly like this in these gun-related shootings before the politicians of both parties stand up to both the gun industry and the gun lobby and grow a spine and join politically courageous Democratic lawmakers like right in Long Island, we have Representative Carolyn McCarthy, whose own husband was killed
right.
in a gun shooting in 93.
Look, I think, you know, Jerry, to that point, I think that rational people can find some common ground on this kind of stuff. I don't necessarily think, you know, we don't need to get rid of guns in society. That's not even feasible. But I think if you have to register a car every year, you should have to register your guns every year. You should have to get a license to carry a gun. You know, cars aren't designed to kill people. Guns are, and you should have to, you know, take some precautions before you get one. Aside from that, you know what? If you want to have the guns that were available when the Constitution was written, you can have your musket without any regulations as far as I'm concerned. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch, and we will be back after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, we're going to finish up the show with your calls. Toll free, 866-987-TOM. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, closing out the show 10 minutes to the top of the hour. This is Carl Frisch filling in for Tom all day today and tomorrow. More about me at carlfrisch.com. Tonight I will be on Currents, The War Room with Jennifer Granholm, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Current. You can check current.com to find out the station in your local area. You can also go to carlfrisch.com for more information. We are taking your calls as we finish up today's show. 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. Michael in Atlanta. Hey, what's going on? Michael. All right. Let's talk to Annie in Palatine, Illinois. Hey, Annie.
Hi, actually my name's Amy, and Carl,
Amy, I'm sorry
doing
about
an excellent job.
Thank you.
That's okay.
Aside from the pronunciation of color names.
3 points, I hope I can make all three.
All right, let's go for first one.
All right, first one, Paul Ryan with his survivor benefits.
Yes.
If he really wanted this to become a non-issue, he would pay that money back to the government with the interest that he wants to charge today's college students. I think that would go a long way. It'll never happen.
Or he could just admit that the government did something that helped him and gave him the life that he has today. One or the other.
We're all living in a pipe dream if we think he's going to do that.
Well, this is true. I think the pipe dream exists in your world, too, because I don't think he's going to do what you recommend.
Oh, goodness, no, I know he's not. But it would make this discussion go away.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, well, that's true. Point number two, if Bain Capital is, closing down American factories and workplaces and sending the jobs over the seas, why aren't people up in arms about this, not literally, of course,
because that's almost anti-American.
Well, I'll tell you why they are. I'll tell you, you know, after when the American workforce has been used to the last 30 years of being just beaten over the head by their employers, not getting good benefits, having their pensions raided, not getting medical care after a 35-hour work week because they don't want to give you a 40-hour work week, not being able to take time off when you have, you know, a new kid or have a sick family member, all of these things that employers have done, and they realize over time it beats them down to a point of submission where they don't think they can change anything. And when the union movement has been crippled in this country so that it's harder and harder to get a job that is part of a union, it teaches people that there's no point in fighting back. Everything is the status quo, and it's always going to stay the same. And that's something that we have to change in this country. So I want to thank you for giving us a call. Let's go to, how about Amy? I just talked to Amy, but let's talk to Bob in Garden City. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how you doing, Carl?
Good. What's up? Thank you.
Great. Yeah, I have a comment and a question about Sarah Palin.
Yes.
Or as I call her, Governor Quitter on Twitter.
Well, she is Governor Quitter. I often refer to her as the less-than-half-term governor of Alaska.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's part of my question. First, my comment is, even though she's not going to be at the Republican convention.
How sad is that, right?
What's that?
How sad is that?
Yeah. Yeah, but she's not going to be there, and Bush is not going to be there. All of their ignorant, destructive ideas will still be there in the form of Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan.
You know what? If we could remind people, Bob, just for a moment, what one of Mitt Romney's economic advisors said on the record. He said Mitt Romney's economic policies would be like George Bush's on steroids. Steroids.
There you go. Yeah.
So, if that's true, the selection of Paul Ryan as his running mate is, you know, probably some illicit street drug in addition to steroids. Let's go to Carol in Charlestown, New Hampshire. Hey, Carol.
Hi. I want people to know that if Paul Ryan, hopefully that'll never happen, gets his budget wish to cut Medicare and dry up Medicaid, that will not only affect the people on Medicare and Medicaid, but the hospitals that rely on that money,
right,
to provide services, your small local hospitals and all these different clinics, they will dry up services and lay off people. And a lot of these people, these conservatives that yak about their healthcare system, a lot of them live in rural areas. They will be in shock what will happen to their healthcare services.
Carol, that's exactly right. We've been working for years in this country to get better healthcare services to people that live in urban and rural areas because there's a real need there. And if these programs are not available, A, these people will not be able to get the care they need, and B, when it's an emergency, they won't have anywhere to go, let alone have coverage that takes care of them when they need it. It's sick. It's absolutely sick, but it's symptomatic of the Republican values. Remember, this is a party that didn't support Social Security or Medicare to begin with. This is their way of killing it and making it so unliked that people have no problems voting for Republicans because they want to kill these programs. These programs are very popular with the people that are on them right now. You can't turn, you cannot cut them completely because it would cause an uproar. But if you can ruin them, then you can get the people on your side. It's precisely what the Republicans are doing with the post office right now. Post office has been in the black since Richard Nixon made it survive solely on the sale of stamps until the Republicans inserted a poison pill that requires the Postal Service to pay in advance for the health care retirement benefits of employees that won't be born for another 75 years, and now they're in the red. Surprise, surprise. And the Republicans won't let them raise the price of stamps, so they're in the red for the first time ever, ever. So I want to thank everybody. It's been a great show today. I've had a delight filling in. Tom's team has been very helpful. These are tremendous shoes to fill. I want to let you know that you can watch me tonight on Current Television. I will be on The War Room with Jennifer Granholm at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can read my column that I put out today about Paul Ryan getting selected by Mitt Romney at carlfrisch.com. And as always, connect with me on Facebook and Twitter at Carl Frisch. And we can stay connected when I'm out there not doing Tom's show. Tom will be back soon. And I'll be back tomorrow. So with that, I'll say thank you and look forward to chatting with you more tomorrow. Check out TomHartmann.com for information about tomorrow's show, and we'll chat with you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.